Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Thanks for listening to Creative Control. While I have you here, please consider supporting Youth Empowerment and Support Services, otherwise known as YES. Based in Edmonton, Alberta, YES provides immediate and low-barrier overnight and day shelter, temporary supportive housing, and individualized wraparound supports for young people aged 15 to 24. They work collaboratively within a network of care focused on the prevention of youth homelessness by providing youth with the necessary supports to stabilize their housing, improve their well-being, build life skills, connect with community, and avoid re-entry into homelessness. Learn more about how to donate or otherwise support YES by visiting yess.org.
Hi, I'm Jed Bodwin, and I live in Wichita, Kansas. I am a Patreon supporter for Creative Control. I discovered Creative Control some years ago, I think maybe while looking for interviews with Tommy Stinson of The Replacements. And I stumbled across this conversation that Vish had with Tommy Stinson that was really insightful. Vish held his own. I think Tommy can be a little bit of a difficult interview at times. And it went really well, and it really got into some areas that I wasn't expecting. And I thought, gosh, I have to listen to more of this guy and his podcast. Yeah, sometimes I'm not necessarily a fan of the music or musicians that Vish will have on the show, but I always appreciate their creative process a little bit more, and more times than not, though, it does lead me to finding a new musical artist that I'm interested in, or to think a little bit differently about maybe some artists whose work I've overlooked. So, you know, go ahead, and if you've been waiting at all to support Vish and Creative Control, now is probably the best time to do it. I know as a public radio employee here in Kansas, listener-supported broadcasting, whether it's podcasts or radio itself, really isn't a thing of the past. It's actually very much a thing of both the present and the future. So, yay Vish, yay Creative Control.
To make your flexible monthly donation to Creative Control, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol today.
Creative Control with Vish Khanna.
Roy Wood Jr. is a tremendously funny and astute comedian based in New York City. Originally from Birmingham, Alabama, Wood is likely best known as a correspondent on The Daily Show, a position he recently left for new career pursuits. He has been an acclaimed and practicing stand-up comedian for decades, whose latest special is 2021's Imperfect Messenger, and is also an actor who's appeared on Better Call Saul, Only Murders in the Building, and Sullivan and Son, and had a feature role in the 2022 film Confess Fletch. Between November 2nd and November 25th, Wood is headlining a Just for Laughs comedy tour that goes from coast to coast in Canada. And so we reconnected for a talk about things like watching baseball and the 2023 World Series, being on the road again and studying up on Canada, why he decided to leave The Daily Show before it named a permanent host to replace Trevor Noah, his own interest in that job, the current health of late-night talk shows, and how comedians navigate a fractured media landscape, his work on Better Call Saul and our shared love of that show, his remarkable set as the featured comedian at the 2023 White House Correspondents' Dinner, what President Joe Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris said to him after that performance, whether or not Canadians care about the CFL, future plans, and much more. A part of the Entertainment One Network with the support of listeners just like you who follow and subscribe to this donor-driven podcast and spread the word about it, and in fact make flexible monthly donations at patreon.com/creativecontrol. That Patreon is the primary source of revenue for all of the work that I put into the show, and I could use your support. So if you can, support Creative Control on Patreon today. Thank you so much. Plus in-kind support from Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee, respectively, in Guelph, Ontario, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario, all wonderful independent businesses. This is episode 816 of Creative Control, featuring the lovely and talented Roy Wood Jr. with your host, me, Vish Khanna. Hey, Roy, how's it going?
What up? What up?
Nice to see you again. Thanks for making time. Where in the world are you?
I am in Moncton, New Brunswick, in the eastern parts of Canada today.
Nice. Have you ever been there before?
Negative. I've never set foot in this city before, and so far, so good. Picked up a local paper, so we'll see what's cracking.
You know, one of my favorite bands is from Moncton. They're called, they were called Eric's Trip. So if you talk to anyone about my vintage and ask them about Eric's Trip, you might end up in an interesting conversation. I'm just letting you know.
Okay.
Just giving you some ways to meet with the locals. That's all. You know, as we're speaking, I heard a little bit of a Beatles song. There's a new Beatles song. Do you know about this?
They're still making music?
Somehow they are. They used AI. To create a brand new song. I don't know if you're a Beatles fan, okay. But I find this interesting.
I'm not an AI fan. I'll tell you that much. Not thrilled to know that that's how things are happening.
That was a major discussion point in the writer's strike, I believe, this use of AI. And people's likenesses. Anyway, yeah, it's just a weird thing. Did you watch the World Series? I see you're wearing a Cubs cap there.
Yeah, I did. I watched it from an airport bar, unfortunately. It's always weird watching sports in a group setting with strangers and none of you are invested in the game. You know, like you just, it's not that you're not invested in the team, but you are the game. So you can turn to one another period. Oh man, did you see? He sucks. Okay, let's keep watching some more. But yeah, I watched a little bit of it. Congrats to the Texas Rangers.
Yeah, I couldn't tell who my horse was in that particular race. I watched as much of the playoffs as possible. And once you're, like you say, once your home team or the team you love gets eliminated, I keep going. Are you someone who stops when your particular team doesn't make it?
Yeah, no, I still like the sport of baseball. I still like sports, but I find players to root for. And I like the Rangers seem young and fun.
Yeah.
So why not?
Yeah.
Why not root for them? The Diamondbacks, what they did was amazing. I mean, they leapfrogged my Cubs in September. You know, to go that far as a wild card team is absolutely amazing. And I think that's the excitement baseball wanted back in the game. Though I think deep down, everybody wanted the Braves or Dodgers. Like that, or I was hoping for a Braves Orioles World Series. That was the one that I was kind of hoping for. 200 win teams,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I just like you. I just like the game. Whoever ends up where they end up, I pick my favorites and I will. I know some people don't like the Rangers for all sorts of reasons, but I was kind of rooting for them there. I grew to like them. Yeah. I also don't like Houston. So I liked that happens too when you really hate a team and then a team you don't even know that much about beats that team. They're your team. You ever have that?
Well, you know what's weird is that I'm not crazy about the Astros, but I love Dusty Baker.
Yes.
So it's like this, you know, this gift and a curse, you know, type of thing. And also Dusty wasn't there during the year in question.
Yes.
With the Astros.
Yes.
So I feel like it's not his fault per se, but I don't know.
Did you see the altercation between Dusty and the umpires? Did you see that game?
No.
Okay.
That must have been one of the ones where I was in a blur on
okay.
tour.
Like, I just was curious if you had, that's fine. We don't have to talk about it too much, but just so you know, he got in a huge argument with the umps and they hoofed him, but he stayed for like forever. And I was just wondering why, how the ejection worked. Cause they were like, you're gone. And he was just there another 10 minutes, still yelling at them. Anyway, I thought if you'd seen it, you would have some insight. I thought that was odd, but maybe
nah,
that's.
I missed that one.
So, how is life on the road going for you these days, right?
I mean, everything is fine. You know, it's good to be back on the road, but you know, the road is the road. I don't really have much new to say about it. I'm just thankful that I get to go to a bunch of new cities this time and try some stuff. This entire tour this year has been great. Had some great shows in some familiar places and then markets that I haven't been to in a long time, like, you know, your Kansas Cities and your Vancouvers and Kansas Cities and Virginia Beaches and stuff like that. We're going to Vancouver later this month. I'm excited about that.
Yeah.
But yeah, good times.
So you say back on the road. How long were you off the road? Is that pandemic related, work related?
Yeah, about 2 years. I mean, you do your dates here and there. I had an hour special come out in 2021. And so that was probably the last time I was on the road on a regular basis. And then 23, I popped out and like really like in terms of like setting, OK, here's 30 cities, consecutive weekends and go.
Yeah.
That's been a whole different beast.
Right. Are you noticing shifts in audience behavior or any other kinds of adjustments you've had to make since the pandemic began or just given whatever is going on in the way people attend events these days, I suppose?
I haven't noticed anything in particular. I think audiences are more energized and more excited to be at a show now, if anything,
yeah.
You know, more than anything else. But, you know, just in terms of just straight up, is it weird or people rushing the stage or heckling or anything like that? Nah, I haven't seen anything like that. Not at my shows, at least.
Are you engaging in any more crowd work than you might normally do? Anything like that?
No, I'm not really a crowd work guy to begin with.
No.
So, yeah. You know, if somebody had, like, I might ask a direct question to someone, but for the most part, you know, I've been able to get off my jokes and been able to be edgy and being able to talk about things that are a little still weird and outside the box. So in that regard, you know, I'm cool. That's kind of why I'm enjoying this challenge of being in Canada for a month, because it's going to force me into thinking about things a little differently and talking about the issues that are more pertinent to people here. I don't think I can just get on stage and talk about a bunch of American stuff, you know, for people who don't live in America.
Is that normal for you to like try to, I assume, read up, learn up on a country you're visiting and try to address?
Yeah. I'm not, don't get me wrong, I'm not going to sit here and do an hour on Canadian shit, but Trudeau's getting a divorce while he's in office. Let's talk about that. They're subsidizing heating oil costs. It costs Canadians more to heat their home than fuel their cars. Let's talk about that.
Yeah.
You know, like that type of stuff is, oh, that's not an American thing. Like, American politicians don't get divorced while in office. You get divorced at, like, hey, let me finish serving the people. Then, then you can get a divorce from me for cheating on you. How dare you?
Right. Yeah, that is a subtle difference about that. What does that say about us? What does that say about Canadians to you that we won't do the performative thing and, you know, carry on for appearances? Does that say something about us?
I don't know. And that's what I've got to sit and get to the bottom of. I mean, you know, this is also where going on Canadian Reddit and just doing a deep dive into how people feel about issues here and then having jokes about those differing perspectives. So there's a little bit of research that has to happen, you know, as I inch my way across the country day by day during this month. And so, you know, I'm anxious. I'm anxious to see that. But in terms of changing things up, that's probably the biggest change. But I'm not going to do a bunch of crowd work or anything.
No, no, just curious. If you did, yeah. Canadian crowds, very, very generally, pretty nice. I bet you'd have nice, polite crowd work exchanges. That's all I'm getting at.
Yeah, that's what I hear. That's what I hear. They say they're nice, but I don't want to assume that.
We're not all nice, by the way. Some of us aren't. I like to think I'm okay. this approach to kind of looking at regional news, I suppose, is this something that preceded your time at The Daily Show in your act? Would you talk about local stuff and read up about it? I don't mean to be reductive, but you were on a show where that was kind of part of your job, I think, was to try to make fodder or use the news and the news cycle as fodder for a comedy. Was that something you had to learn to do on that show, or was that something you were already doing?
Yeah, that was something that I was already doing for the most part, only because my degree is in broadcast. And so part of the prerequisites when I was in school was that you would get a current events test, a quiz every day. So you had to read the paper. So the habit of finding a paper and gathering the news of the day was already a habit that was just drilled in me from college. And then once I got a little older and started doing stand-up, I found it fun to try and do one local joke per set. Like even as an MC, you know, we're talking way back in 1998. So, you know, in those days, it was just more fun to try and talk about other things. But what I started noticing as I traveled the country and kept reading local papers is that most of the news is the same.
Yeah.
There's a murder. There's some company doing something shady. The police messed up. There's a corrupt politician, you know, and then there's something charitable happening. Donate money to help for the sad thing. And so once you start noticing that, then you notice the things that connect people. And so that's just kind of what I do now. And so, you know, I like it. And it's not like you're going to get a golden joke every time you do that. Your hit rate may only be once or twice a year where you see something that is significantly thought provoking to the point that it creates, that it opens up a new pathway of exploring a topic or an issue. That's kind of why I enjoy YouTube now, because YouTube and Reddit are not just a place for the news, but to in real time see people's opinions of the news. Right. And that gives me the ability to not be on stage giving an opinion that everyone else has already given.
Right.
It gives me an opportunity to have a more original perspective on something.
When you discover that experiences, good or bad, are universal on some level, on the one hand, I would assume that's sort of heartening and reassuring. Okay, like even if it's bad, everyone's going through the same shit. On the other hand, is it sort of spooky? Mm-hmm. Is it eerie? How can every place and everybody be going through the exact same thing, particularly if it's bad? Why isn't this being rectified? Do you have those kinds of thoughts?
I don't think about it like that. I just think about it more of it's made me less inclined to hold people accountable and more look at the system. You know, you have to hold people accountable to change a system, but people constantly change. The issue is what remains.
Right.
So it's about people coming in and going, yes, I'm going to be the person to change the thing. Okay, well, how? And then grilling that person about it. And I think that's the thing that's most fascinating to me. Is, you know, well, how do we change this issue? Or let's look at this bigger thing that we're all experiencing and then acknowledge how that is also affecting us as a people. Like if you look at automation and the customer service experience, and like self-checkout to me has created an atmosphere where we're not as interactive with sales reps. Mm-hmm. And if you're a person living in loneliness, the retail experience is one place where you would expect to kind of have, even if it's a fake 5-minute friendship, there was hospitality. So the lack of hospitality, I think, creates an even more feeling of isolation in this world. Now, it's my job to make that funny, of course. But, you know, to me, that's kind of where my curiosities lie. But, you know, people are in pain all over the place. Yeah. There's discrimination all over the place. There's death and dying, there's crime, there's poverty all over the place. And then it's just a matter of the severity in which you want to address you know, which one is most important versus the one you can make a joke about, which is the issue we were always having at the Daily Show.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I appreciate that. You mentioned the Daily Show. I know you've had to speak to this numerous times, but as we're speaking, it's the beginning of November. I think you've had some time to talk about this situation of yours and also maybe process what it means at this point in time. Can you tell us a little bit about your decision to leave that show, where you're at with that decision as we're speaking right now today, Roy? Can you do that?
I mean, I don't know what else there is to say. Like, it just, it boiled down to being a situation of not wanting to be in limbo. That's it.
That's pretty much it.
They don't know what they want to do for a host, and I don't see that decision happening anytime soon.
Yeah.
Not knowing where I fit in the show, be it as a host or as a correspondent for a new host. There's been a year to answer that question. So, you know, Trevor stepped down in September of last year.
Yeah.
So there's been literally a calendar year to figure that out. So while you all figure that out, I'm going to go over here and figure out my own stuff. And that's really all it boiled down to. And the job of correspondent is not the type of job where you can multitask. You are not going to be able to do anything else other than that job. Mm-hmm. Also, I'm a father. Also, I'm on tour. So there's just a lot happening already. So you have to take something off the table to be able to be a little bit better at the things that remain. So I just needed time to focus on what I wanted to do next. Like, there wasn't a lot of political back and forth. There wasn't angry or contentious. It was just, hey, you know, my contract expired during the strike. So when it came time to ask the question of coming back to work, it's like, oh, what's the plan? We're still figuring it out. Mm. Okay. Well, I don't think this is how I want to spend the rest of my year doing this job. Because come January, when the strikes are over, it is going to be a creative arms race to get content back on the air. And it is going to be super competitive. So if I can get a hand up on that, you know, we're hedging bets. But, you know, that's really what it boiled down to.
Okay, well, first of all, for what it's worth, I think I represent a lot of people who want to commend you for making this decision. It probably wasn't an easy one. I think some of us would just continue to be, quote unquote, like a good soldier and wait because a career opportunity might be forthcoming. So I just want to say, for what it's worth, I really admire this decision you made. This is a weird question potentially, but do you think your decision here precludes you from then now being like, if they come back to you and say, look, we've looked around, we might have fucked up. Would you consider coming back and actually being the host? I don't know if that's a wild hypothetical. Do you think leaving precludes you from even being engaged in such a conversation? Is it possible for you to speculate?
That's a question for them. I didn't leave because I wasn't chosen. I left because I'm not sure what they want to do.
Yeah. Okay.
You have a plan, come back to me. Yeah. I think I'm definitely done as a correspondent regardless.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think I can come back and do that. But in terms of hosting, if they came back and wanted me to host, I think there's for sure a conversation to be had. Like, it wasn't like I'm taking my ball and leaving. It was just, I need to go figure my life out because I don't know what this is going to end up as.
Yeah.
And if it don't end up in my favor, I'm the one that's fucked, not you.
Yeah.
So I need to protect myself. So bye-bye.
Yeah.
That's it. So if you come back and go, hey, host, okay, let's see. But then, you know, there's also a bigger conversation to be had about late night and creatively what late night is going to eventually turn into. And exploring that. And I think that's where anyone who's hosting the Daily Show or any show in late night is really going to have to consider what the creative future of the genre is.
I want to ask you about late night and sitcoms and other things in just a moment in terms of how they relate to the old models of comedians and their trajectories. But I appreciate this decision you've made. On a human level, do you miss working at the show?
Yeah, I miss my friends. I mean, I miss that. I don't miss the grind. You know, the show has done things that there is a lot of worth in what we do. We're still a comedy first program. I don't think we set out to change the world. The jokes might give people a different view of the world, which is a good thing. But I'm not like a retired cop who longs to be back in the car and the smell of the, I don't miss it yet. It's not, it hasn't been long enough.
You don't miss the work. You miss the camaraderie.
I don't miss getting sent to a place on short notice to talk about a powerful issue with amazing people, yeah, all crammed into 48 hours, 36 hours sometimes. And then
hard job.
Right back. Yeah. It's a lot. So yeah. I think that there are other ways that I can come up with other ways to bring light to a lot of the issues that the show addresses if I never end up back at that show.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been speculating, at least to my wife, that they haven't really named a successor, maybe because they're trying to avoid being locked into paying someone a permanent salary. Like, I'm just trying to figure out what this is. As you say, it's been over a year.
Comedy works best when the viewer has a relationship with the host.
Yeah.
The host eventually earns the trust of the viewer to do material and topics that they probably would never have done in their guest host week.
Right.
So, you know, I just think, and they know that as a network, they're looking for a host. So inevitably you have to put someone in that chair. You know, you can do all the guest hosting all you want, but next year is an election year in America and you're going to need some relationships. You know, I think.
Right. And they don't have that. That's true. That's an interesting point. So shouldn't they, again, I think you've spoken to this to some extent, and to the extent that I think you're just as baffled as anyone else. What is your perspective on what is preventing them from making a call on this? Like, I just don't, I don't get it. You're closer to it, but I think you're also confused. Yeah, you don't know either.
No, okay. I mean, I'll be honest. I haven't thought much about it. Like, I'm very selfish in that regard. I got a career to run. I know you probably, it could be money. It could be looking for the right person with ratings and all of that stuff. I know there was rumors that it was going to be Haas, and then there was rumors that it wasn't going to be. So if you're going to go this way or that way, maybe Haas was already the guy and they were waiting for the strike to end. You know, I don't know. But if you are looking for the perfect golden goose, you know, it's hard to say. And it's hard to compare the decision to hire Jon Stewart to the decision to hire Trevor Noah to what they're doing now, because these are all clearly different places, the economics of entertainment and also the news cycle and the viewer's relationship with the media is different as well, too. So, you know, I do not know. And I've just never given much thought to it. I would imagine that having the guest host does help in the short term with the novelty of having different types of people and different political perspectives. And you just kind of treat it like a, you know, a little round table for a while, you know, you kind of punt the ball for a few months until you give the reins over to someone. The issue could be money. Maybe they had a host and that host had different creative ideas that the network didn't want to do. Maybe they had another host who wanted to do it, but they didn't want to do it as many weeks. So I'm sure people are taking their calls if they're calling them. So beyond that, it's money or creative.
Yeah.
So that's at that point you're into that. That's a network question, but I can't wonder why and then see how I could sneak my way in and be the solution to their problem. I don't have time to figure out what your problem is. Let me know when you solve it. In the meantime, I'll be in Canada telling jokes, making money, trying to build my profile.
Yeah.
I'm going to sell a TV script or two. I'm going to try and go do a movie and I'll be over here doing that. I love y'all.
Yeah.
But I can't wait for that.
Again, good for you, Roy. I'm just saying I appreciate it. And I think I'm not the only one who does. So, thank you.
If you're going to be horrified in your life, you should be horrified at the choices you've made and not the situations you've been thrust into.
Hmm.
And that was feeling more and more like potentially ending up a situation that I would be thrown into where you name a new host, the new host doesn't want correspondence, or we're doing budget cuts and you're one of the senior correspondents, I'll be the first to go. Or it's a host I don't want to work with, and creatively I don't think I can do something that honors what they're trying to create, so we should part ways. Either way, it's January 1st and I don't have a fucking idea. I don't have a fucking plan.
Yeah.
No. So I'm not going to operate like that.
Yeah. You alluded to late night and how it's shifting. Sorry, I don't want to put words in your mouth. And
you're fine.
Yeah, well, from my perspective, the relevancy of conventional vehicles for stand-up comedy, like late-night talk shows and sitcoms, that's been waning for some time now. Like when I was a kid, I would either, if I could, I'd stay up late, or I'd set my VCR and I'd tape Letterman and Conan, and we would all kind of talk about it. And I think we're past that for the most part. I'm trying to get at the fact that I think the relevancy of late night shows and sitcoms, particularly for comedians as a marker of success, for one thing, has shifted. On the other side of it, I think they're being consumed less by people in general. I mean, I watch Closer Look on YouTube, but I don't stay up and watch it on the TV. So like on the Seth Meyers segment, sometimes I'll watch that. But I used to be like religiously watching the whole entire show, and I knew the pacing and I knew how the show was produced. And I feel like I'm older. I don't know if that relationship with younger people and TV talk shows is quite the same thing. That's my read on
it. No, it's not.
Yeah.
That's not, I mean, the statistics prove it. Like, ratings are lower. The cumulative ratings have declined over years for late night. I think that there's still relevance. Young people still seek to be entertained. They still seek to have a relationship with stars and stuff like that. I don't think late night's dead. I just think it has to recalibrate. It's got to run a different offense. It's got to switch to Southpaw and exist more in places where other people are right now. You know, like, entertainment has changed, in my opinion. It used to be a place where you could build your shop and people would come to you. But now people are where they are and you have to go to them. So you have to meet them on their individual platforms through that platform style of entertainment. I do think, though, we should be very careful in watching the contraction of the streaming companies. And as they start adding ad tiers, it's going to create a more linear television-like viewing experience for young people. And eventually, if streaming implodes on itself back into its basically kind of sort of cable look and feel, then we're right back in 1992 again. And content and history will repeat itself. You know, you look at a guy like Shane Gillis, who has one of the most watched Netflix specials of the year. Shane has not been on late night television at all.
Kind of got blacklisted there too, right?
Yeah, but he found his audience. Audience is king. You think Netflix cared that he got blacklisted from Saturday Night Live? Netflix don't care.
Yeah.
Shane is funny. Shane has people who think he's funny. That's enough for Netflix. And he's number one over people who weren't blacklisted or who haven't been canceled or however you define that. So, yeah, the idea of finding your audience solely through late night. You know, Ray Romano was probably the last one. Kevin James was probably the last one to do a late night show, then get a sitcom, then do movies.
Right.
And be huge. And Kevin James nailed it at every level. But each tier got him the next tier and got him the next tier. There's young influencers and social media stars right now that are just sitting in films and haven't done any of the previous levels. You know, you got this kid, Kai Cenat. He's a Twitch kid, plays video games. Celebrities come over to his house to play games with him.
Yeah.
That's the new Johnny Carson couch.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't imagine that kid has a single SAG after credit. But God bless him, because he built his audience and people care about him and he has eyeballs. And wherever there's eyeballs, celebs are going to come because they're whores for attention. So, you know, there's a million ways to get the eyeballs of people.
Yeah, there's no one way is where I'm coming from. I think we've outlined how in the past there were one or two things you would do and then you would land somewhere and get some money and have a viable career. This is probably a difficult question to answer, but as I ponder what you've just been through and what you're doing right now, hitting the road and doing comedy, do you have a sense, Roy? Like, if you could do any one thing next in this weird landscape, what are you looking at? What do you have your eye on that would be like the utmost in terms of where you want to be?
I mean, in terms of physical stability, I think I enjoy acting. I enjoy writing. For as long as you can write, you'll have a job in this industry. There's more things to write for than there are to act in.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
But I do enjoy the idea of talking to regular people. So that's something I want to explore a little bit more of. I'm not sure in what capacity or how to do that, but I think connecting with the regular folks, but in a non-scripted late night capacity, that's something I'll have to ideate on my own. That's not something anyone's going to give. No one's paying money for new ideas anymore.
Yeah, that's a weird part of this, isn't it?
Here, bro.
Yeah.
We're doing stuff that looked like something else that's already been done, bro.
Yeah.
That's how the networks play it. They bet the table minimum. Mm. So if you want to get wild with it, you got to do it on your own dime and do it on your own time. And so that's part of where leaving The Daily Show gives me the time to sit and just think. So I can't even completely answer that question yet because my mind is still not completely still. And in that stillness, I think that's where the ideas come.
Yeah, I appreciate that. You did say something there that I want to just touch upon. I know it's probably a glimmer in your eye, but talking more to regular people, is that what you said?
Correct.
Yeah, what is
like
that?
The way, I don't know. But I I've seen people do live streams where they talk to randoms. I've seen the young kids on TikTok with the tiny mics talk to regular people. I've seen people go out and set up a table and invite people to sit down. There's a million ways. I do not know. But I do know starting
not
there,
crowd work. Not crowd work per se,
no.
But talking to regular people.
Yeah, earth work.
Yeah. No, that sounds interesting. I have to tell you, I don't have to. I'm going to. I've been rewatching Better Call Saul for probably like the fifth or sixth time. I can't stop watching that show. I just find it endlessly fascinating. And anyway, like a week or two ago, your scene came up, the big scene with you and Kim Wexler in the storage room with all the files. And I got so excited to see you, Roy. I'm a big fan, and you nailed it there. So I hope you get to do more acting.
I hope so.
Did you, were you happy with the end of that? Did you watch the series? Like, did you keep up with it beyond your role in it?
Yeah, I felt like I was already a fan. When I got the call, I was like, huh? I was praying that Gus Fring wouldn't murder me. It would have been an honor to be in a scene with Giancarlo Stanton. Giancarlo Esposito. I'm thinking of Giancarlo from the Yankees.
Yeah, baseball in our brains.
The other Giancarlo. But they send you the script, and it's like all redacted, and it's like only your lines. Sometimes you don't even see what your character says back to you yet until the day. Like, it's like they keep that shit under lock, bro. It was a good time. It was a really, really good time. But yeah, you know, Vince Gilligan, like, you know, to go back to back with two different series that essentially tie up that entire universe and the world of those people, is a beautiful thing.
I feel like it's underappreciated, like when it comes to like awards and stuff. Like, I can't think of better.
Snub City.
It is, right? I'm not. Okay. What did they not do to deserve more?
They just ran up against the buzzsaw that was Game of Thrones and then Succession.
Yeah. HBO. HBO in particular. I've watched those shows as well. I think what Gilligan did surpasses that. It may be just my opinion, but here's a controversial thing. I don't expect you to engage necessarily, but I'm at a point where I think Saul is better than Breaking Bad somehow. I know this is ridiculous. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, it's a more human, it's a more real story.
Well, but they had to do all this temporal interweaving and tie up that show and connect it to that universe as well. I just have never seen anyone quite do this, is where I'm coming from.
Yeah, like, it's a prequel and a like extension of Breaking Bad all at the same time.
It's somehow unbelievable. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it really is. And the present day stuff, we see how it all connects back to the past.
Yeah.
And how the past justifies the choices he makes.
Yeah.
In the present. It's definitely a long walk.
I'm in a loop because I did watch, I finished Better Call Saul when it actually finished. Then I rewatched Breaking Bad, and then I watched all the other things. Anyway, I don't mean to go on about it. I'm just happy you had a role in that. It's really great, and I just want to mention that I was happy to see you on screen. Now, you recently, in the last, I want to say, 6 months, you destroyed at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. Congratulations on that. How did it feel when you were on stage performing?
Performing at the Correspondents' Dinner is jumping out the plane and then putting your parachute on as you're falling to the ground. It's the only thing I can compare it to. It's horrific, but you have to smile through it and act like everything's going fine and then hope the first joke lands, which it did. Biden laughed at it. And so that was enough for me to go, okay, all right, I know what I'm doing. All right, I can keep doing this now.
You seemed very centered. You seemed on point. It was impressive. I just want to say that.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. I mean, it was a good time. I'm thankful for the opportunity. I think it's one of the toughest but most rewarding gigs in comedy.
Listen, I don't know if you're saving this for a memoir or something or if you've already spoken to this. President Joe Biden said something to you during the standing ovation that you received. Because you, just so if people haven't watched it, and I'll link to it in the podcast stuff here, Roy did this remarkable thing where he hit every note. It ended emotionally. Your mother was there. It was just beautifully done. It was hilarious. It was sharp. I loved every aspect of it. But he said something to you, and he did his kind of Joe Biden pointing thing. Can you share anything from that encounter?
I don't even remember. I my brain was just in another place. Just like, oh my God, what the fuck? What did I just do? What did I just do? What did I just do? Oh my Lord. I do remember when Kamala walked past as they were leaving, she didn't say funny. She said funny. Doug said, the first gentleman said funny. And then Kamala said something I really appreciated. She said, wonderfully constructed, which to me is like, you get what I was trying to do. You know,
it's a very accurate compliment.
Yeah, like that one meant a lot. That one I really appreciate it. But no, you know, myself and the writers, we were just trying to figure out a way to talk about things that are, you know, fun but also relevant.
Yeah.
You know, without, you know, completely dividing the room or whatever. But, you know, it was good. It was good. And if there's ever, you know, a gig in my life that I can hang my hat on and go, you know what, I did all right with that one, that's the one.
You're clearly, you had this out-of-body experience. So I get the impression from what you're saying that your sense memory of actually doing it is a bit blurry. Did you end up watching it after?
In parts. I still have not sat and watched it in its entirety since I did it. I ran that set so many times, man, I am incapable of watching that without overly critiquing it. So I'm just not, no. I'll get around to it, but it'll have to be years from now when I'm like finally detached and dismissive of it.
So, okay, going back to what I was saying, I appreciate that some of whatever was going on in your periphery might not have registered because you were concentrating. But did the reaction to any particular bit surprise you in any way, like good or bad? Did a joke hit in that room that made you think uh-oh or wow?
The Clarence Thomas bit and saying that Clarence Thomas is an NFT that made me laugh.
Sorry, it's a really good bit. That's very funny.
the gay people aren't grooming your kids, besides those kids are going to get shot anyway.
Yeah,
I knew that one would make them groan. And that was an interesting joke because when we ran it in the comedy clubs, it got a laugh.
Mm.
Because those are constituents. Whereas in the room on the day, you are talking with people who are either the lawmakers that are responsible for the laws that happen, that make it happen or not happen.
Yeah.
Or you're talking with the people who are basically the media that's responsible for how you cover it that influences the perception of this issue.
Yeah.
So of course there was going to be more offense taken in the room. So figuring out, like doing jokes that you don't know how they're going to do in the room was probably one of the harder parts of the correspondence dinner.
You know, you did a thing that I noticed, and it was notable to me because there are comedians who have taken to that stage. Hassan is one of them. I don't remember if Michelle Wolf falls into this category, but they kind of went after as much of the media in the room. I'm sorry, there's a long tradition of this. I just picked two random people. Mm-hmm. But you did a thing which I think was fascinating, and it speaks to the vice president's comment, I think. I think you were being critical of them, but you wrap up praising the truth and the role the journalism has in revealing the truth to the people on a local level, on every level. I assume this was a conscious choice of yours, not simply playing to the room because you knew your audience was mostly journalists. Like this was a true thing you said. Were any of these past correspondence dinners and performances, did they play a role in how you were going to tonally speak to people in this room?
A little bit, but the more I watched them, the more I realized that none of them really, you can't compare them. It's like it's like watching somebody else's Super Bowl to decide how you're going to prepare for your Super Bowl.
Right. Okay.
It's all the Super Bowl, but the circumstances are different. My opponent is in a different point in the media cycle. The sentiment against the media was totally different than it was with Hassan or Wolf or Trevor.
Yeah.
And for me, attacking the media, okay, that's fine. But people have done that before, and that hasn't changed anything. And I don't think any one golden joke will change anything, but what's the one thing I can try and educate the general public on? And I know that, I can try and get other people to see what the media is going through as well. Not necessarily a defense of the media, but also newsrooms are shrinking, newspapers are disappearing. So the idea of even presenting the truth is difficult now.
Yeah.
And that's a true statement. So yeah. I don't have time to do that and attack you and tell everybody that you do your job terribly. So
yeah.
I just chose a path. So,
yeah.
And I felt like I could get away with that because of my own insight into the craft, having a degree in it and having come up watching family members do the job.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And I think you had a unique perspective on it, given your family's history with journalism. Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's why they stood up at the end, beyond the fact that you, like I said, you destroyed. One of the wildest and most infamous things about the White House Correspondents' Dinner broadcast are the audience cutaways. So in your case, you might tell a joke about Don Lemon getting fired, and then the camera cuts, I think, to the CNN table to get a reaction shot. And at one point during yours, you even asked them to take the camera off of Kamala Harris, as I recall. Are those cutaways distracting on stage? Like, you clearly can see what they're doing.
Yeah, I have a feed monitor, so I know what's being seen by what's being broadcast.
I see.
It's not distracting. I mean, it was just a fun little, let's be playful and break away from the script for a second, mm-hmm. type of thing, which I think is also very important to make it feel natural and like you're in the room,
yeah.
you know, like the first joke when Biden leaves the podium and I go up there and I tell him that he left some classified documents.
Yeah.
And you may want to hold on to these. That wasn't in the script. That's also, and that's a perfect example of a joke that I couldn't do the night before when I was running the jokes at the DC Improv.
Yeah.
You know, but this feels like the right type of lighthearted thing to say right now.
Yeah.
So let's give it a shot.
One of the things I always notice is there are always people in the audience who seem unimpressed by the comedian.
Oh, of course. That's always. But and some of them people can't laugh because their boss is at the table.
Yes.
Yeah. Like that's, I think that's part of the issue too.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a pretty interesting dynamic, I have to say, because you'll see sometimes they'll do cutaways and the rival network is laughing at the network that's being skewered. It's just I don't know that I've ever really thought too much about how the editing or whatever, the camera work works. I think probably the most famous example is those weird reaction shots to Trump when Obama is roasting him, right? Do you remember? Like, they're vivid to me of like,
yeah,
you can't quite see him, but you can kind of tell he's frowning kind of thing.
Yeah, but I feel like you have to have that degree of that. To me, at that event, the crowd shots of who is and who is not laughing is just as important as yeah. the joke itself, because it's funny. Yeah. It's funny to see someone stuffy be stuffy versus someone else being, you know, so yeah.
You kind of learn who has a sense of humor about themselves and who doesn't.
Correct. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. So I want to ask about your current act here as much as we can. I don't want to give anything away, but I also want to frame this potentially in a weird way, but I'm going to do it anyway because I'm feeling bold. As we're speaking, Roy, there's a conflict in Gaza that is being characterized as a genocide. America seems to be in socio-political end days. There's still a pandemic hospitalizing and killing people. Is any of that or anything else in particular informing your current act on this tour?
Not yet. You know, was it tragedy plus time? Everything you're talking about still needs time.
Yeah.
So I think there's ways, you know, at the Daily Show, the general way we can navigate around a terrible event or a terrible issue is there are no jokes on the event itself, especially when death is involved. Like even when we're talking police body camera murders and things of that nature, right? The joke is never on that. It's the causation and who's blocking or helping the causation, or it's the solution to prevent it from ever happening again and who's blocking or helping that. Those are the quadrants where you can try to exist. But, you know, for me, with my act has always been throughout all of the horrors in the 8 years that I've been at The Daily Show. It's been about trying to find an alternative way to look at something beyond the two sides of the issue. And sometimes that takes time to mine. So I don't feel a need to be first on an issue. Just because it's happening don't mean that I got to brush and have an opinion right now. 9 times out of 10, you ain't completely educated on the topic, or you're not looking at the depth of causation that leads to that thing. If we're going to again use police body camera deaths as kind of a, like say with like Breonna Taylor and everything that happened with that young woman being murdered by the Louisville Police Department. The issue where that started was a no-knock warrant. So for me, if I'm trying to mine Daily Show content or a field piece, then it's about the history of the no-knock warrant and where else in the country have no-knock warrants gone left and somebody fucking died. And it's a lot of places. And then also, what do other countries do? Do they have no-knock? So it's about finding that place to explore. But, you know, I think with the current jokes that I'm doing now, both in Canada and in the States, it's not that different from any of my previous three specials in terms of it's me giving some hopefully fresher and alternative perspectives on a lot of things that divide us. And then also just silly and simple stuff as well. Like my act is not nearly as political as I am on The Daily Show, probably to the point of disappointment to some people. But you know, I'm not going to take in all of the horrors of the world for work and then turn around and also do that.
Yeah.
For my other job.
Yeah.
I also deserve to breathe. And yeah. We talk about mental health and all of that stuff.
Well, and I think your approach to maybe talking about local issues or whatever, local news, it probably gives you a leg up because most of the crowd would be aware of it. Do you think that people are ignoring? Sorry, I don't want to get us into generalizations, but does it feel to you like people these days are generally ignoring more true and good information? Like, is it hard to construct a bit not knowing if everyone actually knows the source material of a topical bit? Like, because I talk to people about various things, and it's amazing that they don't. I'm a bit surprised that they haven't heard of a thing. And then I'm often like, oh, I haven't heard of this thing. And they're like, oh, what are you talking about? It's everywhere. Are you seeing that kind of fracturing of people not knowing what you're referring to?
I haven't seen much of that, but just in monitoring internet back and forths and arguments, I do think that we're starting to see fissures in how people agree on what the truth is. You know, the truth itself is becoming relative. And that's a dangerous place to exist. And that's because there's a lot of misinformation out there, and algorithms can set you up to only be fed the things that, you know, confirmation bias, you know. So I think that's the bigger issue. You know, you can get on stage and say something that comes from a place that you think makes sense. And if someone disagrees with the setup, you know they're not going to be with you on the punchline.
Yeah.
We used to be in a world where people just didn't agree with the punchline.
Yeah.
But now people don't agree with the setup. So, you know, you just have to continue to do your jokes from the place that's true to you and hope that the people that like you are the ones that find their way into the showroom.
So it is a challenge. You're saying it is a challenge to do jokes like those.
I'm saying that is your problem if you don't agree with me.
Okay.
I'm going to present my truth. Like, I don't give a fuck if you don't.
Yeah.
That's not what actually happened. Okay, man. Well, then you go get a show and get a microphone.
Right.
And you go present it the way you think that it, you know, like that type of, like that type of stuff is not, no, I'm not going to argue. Because to be scared of it or to say it's a problem means that I care about every single person. And that's a sucker's bet too.
Yeah.
As a performer.
Yeah.
Is to sit here and think that every single person can help you. Every single person deserves, like you're trying to please everybody. You can't do that. Can't do that.
It seems to me that this has got to be your most extensive Canadian tour. You're in a city right now you've never been to. Is that fair? This tour you're on, is you seeing Canada like you never have before?
Yeah. This is absolutely the most extensive tour that I've ever been on, like period, point blank, in another country. I've done England for like 10, 12 days, but like, you know, we're talking 20, 25 days here in one country. Like, no, I've never done anything like this before. So it's exciting.
So you've been, I gather you're a studious fellow and you've been reading up on some local stuff for the cities you're performing in. Have you done overarching Canadian research before you set foot in our country? And
Not completely yet. Not outside of the heating oil subsidy thing and the Trudeau stuff.
Politics.
For now.
Yeah,
for now, that's enough to get me through. And then we'll delve into hockey a little bit. I need to assess how much people care about the CFL up here. It doesn't seem like Canadian football is something that people are crazy gung-ho about. Not at the levels you are for hockey or the Raptors.
Or the NFL. So, I think more Canadians might
Correct.
Admit they care more about the NFL than the CFL.
Correct. Yeah. So there's just research and immersion and just being and existing in this space that I think will give me what I need to get me through the tour.
If you need any help, just reach out. I know a lot about Canada. I'm from here. I will help you if you need it. Are there things that you are looking forward to or rather places you're looking forward to visiting in particular?
I'm looking forward to St. John's. Is it
Newfoundland?
Is it Prince Edward's Island?
Newfoundland.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, Newfoundland.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to that. And I'm looking forward to Victoria because I've never been. And I want to go back to Vancouver because I want to get that damn Japa dog. That is the best hot dog on earth. And I will be at that damn Japa dog cart. Believe that.
So you are drawn to islands. Are you still living on in Manhattan or New York?
Yeah. I guess that's what I am. I guess I'm an island man.
Well, you're going to have a great time. I know it for sure. We've kind of hinted at what sort of next in that you have some thoughts and ideas. Is there anything you can say beyond this tour in terms of your plan? And I see you've got more tour dates coming up right into the new year, actually. But anything else you want to share at this point?
No, we're good, man. My goal is to write scripts and to try and self-produce other non-scripted content that just connects with regular people in the world and just seeing what they are going through.
Regular people seems to be a phrase that we've come back to. So I'm really looking forward to seeing where you go with this, Roy. I am a big fan. I admire you greatly. As a brief aside, having read your work, having interviewed you before, and even in this one, I feel like you're the king of analogies. Does that resonate with you? You say things in this Rolling Stone article that just came out. I'm like, what an amazing metaphor or corollary. Like, I don't know how you do it. I'm sorry. I don't mean to overflatter you.
No, I'm trying to boil things. That's what comedians, you have to do. You have to boil down the complex into something simple so people can understand it. So that's just all I try to do.
Today you said you wouldn't succeed at your Super Bowl by watching an old Super Bowl. I'm like, yes, exactly. That's a brilliant way of saying it doesn't
it's
matter.
You versus the audience. And each audience is a different team, a different temperament, a different, just different global geopolitical circumstances that influence, you know, that type of stuff. So, yeah, it's a much different situation.
I just admire your wisdom and wordplay, I guess, is what I'm getting at. And it's always a pleasure to get to talk to you. If people want to learn more about you, Roy, on the internet and whatnot, where would you like them to go?
Just myname.com or put an at sign in front of it. And you find me everywhere.
Roy Wood Jr. All right. You know, normally I go out on a bit. Is there something from a recent special we can go out on? A record?
Find the Idris Elba bit and put that in. Or the Leo DiCaprio bit.
Okay, so two actors during an actor's strike. I think this is a nice nod from Roy. A show of solidarity. So you're about to hear a bit either about Idris Elba or Leonardo DiCaprio. Roy Wood Jr., thank you so much for making time for me. It is always a pleasure. I hope you enjoyed yourself. And welcome to Canada.
Indeed.
I know a lot of people don't like those movies. I understand it. I understand the feeling. It's black pain. It's terrible shit being documented on screen. People making money off of it. You know, but our history got to be somewhere. It ain't in the textbooks. So, until we get some better options, we just got to have a couple struggle movies every now and then. It is what it is. But I'll tell you what throw me off, though. I be watching them civil rights movies, man. What throw me off, I watch a civil rights movie and be like, oh, damn, that was a good-ass movie. And then 2 weeks later, you find out the main black dude in the movie is British. You be like, ah, shit. Motherfucker got me. Them black Brits, they good. The anger is a compliment. Them black Brits, they so good, it feel like betrayal. You be watching the movie. This motherfucker be Martin Luther King. I'll have a dream and then a dream and I'll be dreaming and then a dream. And then you see him 2 weeks later in the interview. Well, my jab lives won a jubilant that day. I'm like, all right, let me nickels. I'm like, why is Dr. King talking like this? And this might not be an issue for most people, but every black person remember the day they found out Idris Elba wasn't from Baltimore. Oh, my God. That was a troubling day in the black American community. It's like finding out your daddy wasn't your daddy. It's just Elba. That's Stringer Bell from The Wire. That's Stringer Bell, dog. I'm like, nah, dog. That motherfucker from over there. No, he ain't. You shut the fuck up. And then you saw Idris. You saw him in the, you saw him in the interview. Well, I tell you, for breakfast, me love a warm bowl of beans. They're like, oh. Oh, not my dog. Not my dog. No. Oh. No. Oh. I think part of the rift between black Americans and black Brits, it just boils down to we don't know enough about foreign black people's struggle. We don't know enough about black British people because they don't teach us their history. And if I don't know your pain, I can't trust you to portray mine on camera. That's the issue. But it ain't black Brits' fault. It ain't their fault. We don't know shit about their history. They ain't teaching us foreign racism in America. We ain't learning about the struggle across the diaspora. We just now learning about Tulsa. That shit happened around the corner. Yeah, we too busy learning Roman numerals in America. They ain't teaching you about the struggle across the diaspora. They only gonna teach you, thank God I know the Roman numerals. Now I know which Super Bowl we on. Fucking idiot.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Nice to have Roy Wood Jr. back on the show this time, potentially getting him into Eric's trip. That was, I wonder if that'll happen. I hope he listens to Eric's trip while he hangs out in Canada. I don't know if he made it to any record stores in Moncton there. Anyway, thanks again to Roy Wood Jr. for being back on the show, this time for the 816th episode of Creative Control, which is part of the Entertainment One podcast network and is available just about wherever it is you get your podcasts. If you can't find an episode that you're hunting for, or if you want to learn more about me and sign up for my monthly newsletter, please visit vishkana.com. You can also like Creative Control on various social media things, or follow it, I suppose. You can like it on Facebook. We still have a page. You can follow the show on Twitter at Vish Creative, or you can follow me directly on Twitter and Instagram at Vish Khanna. You can also follow me on Blue Sky and Threads. I'm using those things a little bit. And and other things too, I guess. Just look me up. Also, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol to make a flexible monthly donation to keep this podcast going. $6 American or more a month grants you access to exclusive content, and you get episodes earlier than everybody else, and I can also send you a t-shirt if you like. I am seriously considering a Patreon campaign. I'd like to get, because I want to just, I think my wife and I got to talk, I might put out an episode about this, I haven't decided. I think if I can get it to like 2,000 or 3,000, I could do this. That's like 30 people doing $100 for the, no, that can't be right. No, that's, the math doesn't make, I got, well, wait, that works. You know, those of you who are mathematicians, you could figure out where I was going with that. But anyway, I need that, and I want to figure this out. So look out, I might do some, I'm thinking about it. Maybe like a week-long campaign to see if I can goose the Patreon, because it's so low. Anyway, this sounds desperate. If you can, support me on Patreon today, patreon.com/creativecontrol. Thank you. Also want to thank Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee, respectively in Guelph, Ontario, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario, for their in-kind support for this show. Thanks, as always, to Jim Guthrie for letting me use some music of his on this show. You can learn more about Jim at jimguthrie.org. And finally, thank you so much for listening to this episode with the great, great Roy Wood Jr. He's, as you heard, if you're in Canada, he's touring right across the country. No excuse not to see him. If you live in a city, he's going to be playing nearby. Absolutely. Extensive touring. So thank you, Roy, for being back on the show. Thank you all for listening to Roy on the show and for spreading the word about Creative Control and subscribing to this podcast and following it. It means the world. So I thank you. I will talk to you soon. Bye for now.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.